This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, March 26, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and my goal is the same as it always is, which is to help you become a better investor. And a time where there's so much data and so much information being thrown at us constantly, it's not easy. And our job is to distill down today's news, information, data, into something that is actionable for you, that can help you take some lessons back to your personal situation and make smarter decisions with your money, not just one time, but time and time again. And that's really what the show is about. And we do this by answering your finance and investment questions, mixing in some educational and, once again, actionable material that we will touch on today. And we welcome your calls, as always, 888-99-CHART. But before we get into the show too deep, I want to highlight today's winners of the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. I'm going to highlight tomorrow's matchups that will be in the consumer region between eight companies that will decide who will enter the Sweet 16. But today we had four new members enter the Sweet 16. And the first one would be SBGI, which is Sinclair Broadcasting. And then CENX, that was Century Aluminum, had a nice positive day today. We also had the powerhouse, which is Core and Main. Not a great day, but still positive in a day when markets were broadly, mildly down, which we'll get to in a minute. But the last one in the old economy region was Eaton Corp. That was also positive a bit today. So we have half of our Sweet 16 chosen, and we'll get a couple, we'll get some more entries tomorrow and Thursday. And once again, I'll highlight those matchups for the consumer region in a bit. Now, to ensure you're in the loop, make sure you download each podcast for in-depth analysis and the daily results. Now, with that said, we're going to get to the market performance for today and run down show topics like we usually do, but we also want to get to your calls, and we do that first and foremost. So let's check on that call now.
Hey, Justin and Steve, Matt from South Florida calling. Thanks for always having a great show. Calling about American Express, AXP, like Paul. This is a stock that I've looked at for a while. Wanted to get your thought on the stock itself, holding it for 10 to 12 years in a non-taxable account. Thank you.
All right, looking at American Express, this one has been on a tear since the fall. It bottomed around $140 per share. Now we're at $224 per share. Down $1.57 right now. I do think it is looking a bit toppy, just like the overall market kind of needs a little bit of a pullback and a refresh. Things are just a bit overbought. Obviously, American Express is a very solid business. And one of the reasons why it's doing so well right now is because inflation is going up. They collect a percentage of each charge. So that's helping them. Cost of things are just going up and they're collecting that same percentage. Kind of a microcosm for the broader economy. But there's that part. And then those that they lend to, they do have the normal credit card division that does lend to individuals. Mainly it's to higher income people. And if you take anything away from the economic data as of late, it's that the lower end is not doing nearly as well as the high end. The high end, their home prices are higher, stock prices, bond prices are higher, et cetera. And that they're doing well, and they have jobs, those that are still working. And so not a lot of defaults on those loans. So, you know, you like everything that's happening with American Express right now, and it's certainly a great business. I would definitely have it on my watch list. It's on our watch list for our clients. But right now at these valuations, I think it's kind of priced to perfection. I think it's something Once again, to be on your watch list, if it pulls back in the 180 area, that's when I would pick it up. But yeah, this is one of those names where does have good long-term hold potential because of the quality and stickiness of their business. Now, the biggest, I think, threat is that marrying between Discover and Capital One. Discover has that payment network like American Express has, and Discover has that credit card business that, Capital One has that credit card business that they can kind of bring together and make an American Express light, shall we say, maybe for the lower income and middle income consumers. So I think that's probably the biggest threat. Maybe they encroach on American Express at some point. There's also regulatory potential scrutiny, and that's focusing mainly on MasterCard and Visa. But American Express has a similar type of a charge system, like I talked about. So there's definitely some regulatory scrutiny there that could potentially hurt their business. So those are the risks. I always like to give you both sides, but I still think long-term it does weigh on owning American Express long-term, but near-term, I think it's a bit overbought. That was American Express, AXP. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is in regards to what or who might benefit from the National Association of Realtors lawsuit settlement. Could it be tech companies? Could it be the consumer? I think it might. So we'll explain the National Association of Realtors settlement, tech companies in real estate, how they may benefit, and the process of buying a home maybe without a realtor. That could be a thing that's no longer out of reach with this settlement, and we'll dig into the details a little bit more. We also have some other topics on the docket. One is in regards to regulatory scrutiny, not here domestically. We have that Apple one as of late, but in Europe, and they're targeting not just Apple, but Meta, Alphabet, and other large tech companies that, in their view, are abusing their power, and how could that impact their overall business in Europe? Because remember, the entire European region is the largest economy in the world. And so, you know, what happens within the EU certainly has a large impact on earnings going forward. And then we also want to touch a bit on last week's Fed meeting and a prominent market, a market investor, shall we say, in the bond market. He used to work for PIMCO, Mohammed El Arian. I want to get to his comments in the Financial Times because he does have some great insights that I want to highlight about the future path of monetary policy. Okay, so we're going to look at that. We also have Voice Bank questions. One is in regards to VTV, Vanguard Value, as well as Martin Transport, MRTN. Of course, your finance and investment questions are always number one. So don't be afraid. Pick up the phone. 888-99-CHART is the number to ask your question. Now we're going into a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. And please remember that you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel. If it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place, InvestTalk, And Justin Klein is here now taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was not that red of a day overall. If you look at the S&P, was down 14 points, about a quarter of 1% broadly. Small caps did okay. They were only down 2 basis points. Mid caps only down 6 basis points. So not a tough day overall, but in the trading world, they say many times, it's not how you open, but it's how you close. And we closed near the lows of the day. And we had a sell-off in that last hour where there tends to be a lot of market action, if there's going to be any. And today was one of those days. We haven't seen that in a while, but certainly a risk-off day in a broader uptrend that we've been saying for the last week or two. It's getting a little tired. The momentum is certainly waning. You had the likes of NVIDIA. That was down $24 today. Pretty decent reversal attempt. Yesterday attempted to, it basically made a double top from its February 8th reversal. And so tested the high end of that range and failed today. So that's starting to lose some momentum. You also had the likes of Tesla, that was up $5, but once again, failed at its resistance and closed near the lows of the day. So there are a lot of these large tech names that certainly didn't look very hot as we enter tomorrow. So it'll be very interesting to see if we get some follow through after today's last hour sell off. And I kind of think we might. You know, this is a time period, late March, where things tend to shift and everything's kind of lining up that everyone got bulled up, got excited, and then momentum started to wane over the past 2-3 weeks. And typically when you get that, that is a harbinger for a refresh pullback. And that's likely what we are beginning here over the next, 3 to 6 weeks or so. It's probably what I'm expecting. They'll slip in another caller question now at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. This is Paolo from Gaithersburg, Maryland, calling. I have a question about what happened in Baltimore. My interest is, what's your take on the economic impact this incident has? Can we expect, for example, that oil prices might go up? Because I'm sure it might have some consequences for the supply chains and maybe there might be further economic impacts that might be interesting also for us traders. So I'm looking forward for the answer at the podcast, and I love the show as always, and I wish you all a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks for the call. And yeah, this is was a pretty terrible incident that happened overnight. I did see the video. It definitely looked like it was an accident. The ship lost power and kind of glided into the main support, one of the main support beams for the bridge, and gained power at the last minute, but wasn't able to avoid it, and the bridge unfortunately did fall. So it does look like it was a terrible accident. This is pretty fresh. I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of any major economic tradable consequences. And frankly, I don't think you want to be thinking like that. Unless it's something that's going to affect the whole world, which I can't really see. The Baltimore Harbor, I'm sure there's some trade going through there, but this isn't like what happens here on the West Coast, where there's massive amounts of imports coming into the Long Beach Harbor, the LA Harbor, San Francisco, etc. So I don't really think this is going to have much of an impact. I'll get back to you if I kind of come up with this something and I read anything that kind of sparks my interest and tells me that this will. But I just think this was a bad accident, a terrible accident, and not really anything that you can trade on. Okay. Thanks for the call. Now, we have just posted a new InvestTalk Classroom episode, and it digs into how the Fed's shift to lower interest rates in the future will affect the real estate investment landscape, and you can learn how to investigate the changing real estate market and position your portfolio for success. So join myself and Luke for episode 18 of the Invest Talk Classroom on how a Fed pivot affects the real estate markets. Just head over to YouTube and search, once again, Invest Talk Classroom. And I don't know if you know this, but every episode is now being posted on YouTube. So you can see all the charts that I'm looking at when we get a caller question. Shows all the earnings data and trends and relative strength, etc. So a lot there for you to check out. Now the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my focus point today concerns this question: who or what might benefit from the National Association of Realtors lawsuit settlement? And this is a $418 million settlement. And it's part of an antitrust lawsuit alleging that the group had artificially inflated realtor commissions that home sellers pay. Now, in most regions, 6% is the standard commission for the sale of a home that the seller pays to 50% the seller agent and 50% the buyer agent. So 3 and 3. Now, in higher priced areas like here in Southern California, 6 is a bit high. It's typically more like 5, so 2.5 each. But still, that's a lot of money for many times homes that are multi-millions of dollars. I mean, I know this average home here in Orange County is around $1 million. So, you know, that's $25,000 for both sides. That's a good amount of money, especially when many times neither agent has to do a whole lot to get the deal done. So basically what this settlement does is it's not fully outlaws, but highly discourages any payments to the buyer's agent from the seller. Okay. And so they can, you know, they can still negotiate what it's going to cost for the listing agent to list their home and sell the home. And that might stay around the same 2.5-3%, but the buyer's agent may likely get less and they'll probably be hurt the most. And I think it'll make it easier for the tech companies, Zillow and Redfin, to kind of encroach on the buyer agent's market because they're the ones that have the data anyway. The buyer's agent have kind of lost their power over time. And, you know, that's why a lot of times if you're a new agent, you start off as a buyer's agent. And I think this could make it so, hey, Zillow, Redfin, they already have the data. You can search through and, you know, they may have a team that would set up with the seller agents to go see the homes, et cetera. And maybe they charge a flat fee. And I could see that happening. I think that's what mostly the buyer's agent's business will trend towards. And definitely there's going to be a lot of agents that leave the business. Because frankly, it's harder to be a seller's agent, right? You have to prep the home, you have to get it ready to show, you have to deal with a bunch of different buyers coming through, etc. Being a buyer's agent, you know, can be hard if you get a difficult buyer, one that maybe can't afford everything, maybe is looking in the wrong places, etc., has unrealistic expectations, all of that. But for the most part, being a seller's agent takes a little more work. Now, not to say buyer's agents aren't important. Remember, it is the agent's job to act in the best interest of their client. However, the studies show that the amount of commission that a buyer's agent gets from a transaction greatly influences the homes that are shown. So this buyer's agent oftentimes will only show homes where they might get that 2.5-3% by being the buyer agent on that transaction, where, you know, sometimes maybe the buyer's agent only gets 2%, and then they might discourage their buyers from going that route, even though it's the best home for them. And that studies show that happens a lot. And so what's going to happen here is there's going to be kind of a decoupling of commissions. Commissions are going to be more negotiable on both sides, but once again, mainly for the buyer's agent. And it will likely head towards something like a flat fee. Hey, I'm going to, because the buyer agent isn't getting any money from the seller. So the buyer has to pay the agent. Now, for somebody who's listing their home and maybe buying another home, they just have the agent that's selling a home help with the negotiation for the new home. That's probably what's mainly going to happen. But for new home buyers, this may pose a challenge, because before, you're a new home buyer, it's the seller that's paying the buyer agent. So it didn't matter what agent you went with, as long as you trusted them, etc. Now it's about, okay, maybe this one will only charge me a $1,000 flat fee, or this one will only charge me a $2,000 flat fee. And it may go something like that. Now, overall, though, transaction prices are going to fall. And that is going to be a positive for the consumer and for the housing market in general. Because think about it. If now you go sell your home and you only have to pay a 3% or 2.5% commission, as opposed to a 5 or 6% commission, well, your net outcome is going to be a bit higher. So just naturally in any industry, the less friction there is to transactions, the more transactions tend to happen. And so this could easily increase the amount of supply in the market. Now, it also could drop prices if those sellers are now willing to, since they're not paying a buyer's agent, drop the price 1 or 2%. Okay. So what you're likely to see here is the winners, the consumer, number one, lower cost to buy a home. And the tech companies that could use this as a way to nudge their way into the buyer side and help with the process of the transaction, the negotiation of the transaction, and, you know, be a fiduciary on that side of the transaction, the buyer side. The seller side probably won't change too dramatically, except for maybe more opportunity and more homes on the market. All right, we're heading into a break. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve, Justin, and Luke. This is Matt from Minneapolis, and longtime listener of the show for more than a decade, and love you guys. I have a question hopefully you could help me out with, please. Been listening to you and have some money.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value. so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Looking to put it in value side of the market. I've been doing some searching, and I've been looking at VTV fund, and I noticed their biggest holding is Berkshire, only 3%, however, but they do have over 300 value funds. The other fund I'm considering is possibly just putting it all in Berkshire. And I don't know all the holdings that Berkshire has, but I know it's a great kind of value fund, so to speak. Which one would you guys choose to put in your money into? I'm looking to put in probably, 6 to 7 of my portfolio into this fund for, hopefully a 10-year span of time. Thank you for looking at this and all of your insight. I appreciate it, and best wishes to Steve. Thank you.
All right, looking at VTV, the Vanguard Value ETF, as well as Berkshire B. Now, everyone knows Berkshire is a well-diversified company, and normally I would say, you want to buy the fund that's value tilted and well-diversified. But in many ways, he's correct that Berkshire in and of itself is its own mini fund because they have so many businesses underneath their umbrella. From obviously Geico, their reinsurance business. They have a huge insurance business that is very profitable, produces a lot of excess cash flow, and they'd use that to buy other businesses throughout the years. Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad is number one. They also have an energy division, so utilities and energy distribution. They also have manufacturing services, retail operations. You're talking about Precision Cast Parts and Clayton Homes and Marmon and See's Candy, et cetera. So it's kind of, in many ways, a well-run conglomerate of bread and butter value type businesses. And so, and if you look at the performance of Berkshire versus VTV, Berkshire has done better. So I would go with Berkshire over VTV. Thanks for the call. Now, from time to time, we will receive InvestTalk questions from our new YouTube channel in the YouTube comments. And going forward, what we are going to do on pretty much every show is we're going to highlight a question from our YouTube audience, those that ask questions in the comment section. And we will take one of those questions and answer it on a future show. So if you are listening on YouTube or you want to head over to YouTube and leave a question there, you may be the one to get your question answered on a future show. Now, Devin Smith said, I'm curious whether you follow the CAPE ratio at all or believe it has predictive power over the long term, 10, 20 years average return. Well, I do think it has some predictive return, predictive value, shall we say. However, there is one issue with it, and that is inflation. In an inflationary environment, the CAPE ratio doesn't tell you as much because it's not adjusting for inflation. If inflation is, let's say an extreme example, 10% per year, in 7 years, the average earnings should essentially double, right? The rule of 72. And so in inflationary environments, it's not really important to look back 10-20 years, nearly as much. And then interest rates changed. While interest rates are up, they're still lower than they were, say, in the 90s, for example. So you have to, and it also has terrible predictive power about the near future. Meaning, for everyone else out there, what the CAPE ratio is the cyclically adjusted P/E ratio. It's taking the last 10 or 20 years, typically 10 years, and saying, okay, what is the average earnings And are we on the high ends of that average earnings and P ratio, or are we in the low end? Okay. And for many years now, we've been kind of in the high end of that. And the markets continue to go up. Why? Because liquidity remains abundant. Inflation remains elevated. And in order to have a major deflationary risk-off impulse, you need to have prices declining, not going up. That's what 08 was. It was a deflationary spiral that governments pulled us out of with a bunch of spending and monetary policy. And then COVID happened, and what did they do? They did that on steroids. Everything they did in 2020 was the same thing they did in 2008, and you multiply that by five times, roughly. And that's why you got a major inflationary impulse, etc. And so, is something you look at? Sure, but in no way, shape, or form do you make your decision about investing over the next 6-12 months based on what the CAPE says. Okay, so once again, interesting, maybe help you understand whether long-term returns in the equity markets are going to be relatively high, relatively low, but it's not something that tells you how to position your portfolio in the short to medium term. Okay, thanks for the call. Now let's take a look at tomorrow's matchups, excuse me, in the consumer region of the InvestTalk Market Madness contest. And the first one is Mettler Toledo, MTD. This one has been on a tear, a large cap name, and it's been pretty strong as of late. It's in the industrial space. We kind of highlighted before. They make precision instruments for laboratory, industrial, and retailing applications. And then Urban Outfitters. Urban Outfitters, URBN is the symbol. And pull this up here. Which one would I go with? I'm sure most people know what Urban Outfitters does. If you've ever been to any popular mall, that's been it's been a staple for many years. Urban is definitely oversold, and Mettler Toledo, it looks to be consolidating. So I'm going to go with Urban Outfitters for tomorrow. The next matchup is Gap. GPS is the symbol. And most people know what Gap does, right? They've been around since the 90s. They were hot in the 90s. But mostly this is about that apparel brand, Athleta. That's the women's yoga apparel brand, athleisure wear, shall we say. And that is a bit overbought, down 19 cents today. And that's going up against, interesting enough, Lululemon, the queen of the athleisure space, that's been around a long time. But that broke down 3 days ago. So it had a good day before earnings, and after earnings, it sank. This has had a lower. It's definitely oversold, been down 3 days in a row. I could see it bouncing, but with that recent momentum, I'm going to have to go with Gap. Okay. And then the next matchup is EQH. And that is, EQH is Equitable Holdings. They're the ones that provide financial service advisory services. This one has been on a tear. Obviously, equities are higher, and we run a similar type of business, right? Equities go up, your business tends to do fairly well. And that is against Vital Farms, my favorite egg company. I definitely buy a lot of their eggs, just bought some more of their eggs yesterday. So the momentum is with Vital, and I'm going to go with Vital as well. And then lastly, Home Depot. That one has pulled back pretty dramatically over the last few days, and that's going up against Bell Ring Brands, BRB, and they make ready-to-drink protein shakes, powders, etc. That's also rolling over a bit. I'm going to go with Home Depot mainly because it's just kind of oversold near-term into some short-term support. So those are the matchups for tomorrow in the consumer region of the InvestTalk Market Madness contest. Now, Let's touch a bit on the EU and its rules around some of the major tech companies. And there is a new law, the new digital competition law. It's called the EU's Digital Markets Act. And it took effect earlier this month. And it requires some of the world's biggest technology companies to comply with a long, long list of new rules aimed at boosting competition in places like digital advertising, online search, and most importantly, the app ecosystem. And this is on top of the recent Justice Department allegations against Apple that they are thwarting competition, especially in the App Store. And companies began presenting compliance plans to regulators in the EU, and app developers and rival businesses have weighed in last week. This has all happened last week. And if companies are found to have breached the new rules, they could be fined as much as 10% of their worldwide revenue. Okay. Now, the EU is looking into this and making sure that they are in compliance. So they're investigating this. They announced this on Monday. They were investigating Apple, Meta, and Alphabet. So it's not something that they're just sitting idly by. They're looking into this and saying, are you actually attempting to fairly comply with the rules? And what some of the rules are, allowing the ability to find other ways, other avenues for in-app purchases, for example, or to just buy the app elsewhere and not collect the 30% toll that Apple collects. Now, Apple says they're confident in their plans, that they are complying with these new rules. Google says the same thing. Amazon is not without its scrutiny. They also opened an investigation in Amazon on whether they're giving preference to their own products in the marketplace. So what you're seeing here is not just domestically in an FTC that is going after many of the big tech names, but it's the EU as well, which historically they have been giving big fines. In fact, earlier this month, the EU fined Apple $2 billion over allegations that they set unfair rules for developers of their music streaming app. And a lot of these allegations are very similar. And so this is not just a lot of bark. The EU definitely bites from time to time. And, you know, we're in an environment where profits are at an all-time high for many of these companies. And I think this is a big risk for the large cap tech names that a lot of people don't only focus here on the US and don't focus much on the EU. But like I said at the top of the show, EU is the largest marketplace in the world, largest economy in the world as a whole. And so they can't ignore this. They can't get around it. I think of what happened with Apple and the Lightning cable. Basically, the EU said, hey, you can't make phones with these proprietary cables. They need to be USB-C. And guess what? The latest iPhone is USB-C, the standard that you can charge a lot of electronic devices with. And so that's a very small part of Apple's business, those Lightning cables and licensing that technology and those products. But, you know, what they're talking about are sweeping changes to their entire app ecosystem, operating system, the way they do business, the way that the search engines are selected on these phones, etc. And remember, for a lot of the 90s and early 2000s, the EU was cracking down on Microsoft and their dominance in Windows. And so it's not a shock to see them doing the same with Apple, which is now the dominant smartphone maker. So pretty interesting and something to follow and something to consider if you have a lot of tech exposure, especially those mega cap tech names. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. The number is always 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Brayton from Thousand Oaks. I was just calling out so if I could get your analysis or advice on a company, Impig, I-M-P-I-N-G, and the symbol is P-I. Just hoping you could take a look at it and see if it was worth getting into and what a good price tag would be. I'll listen on the show. Thank you.
All right, looking at Impinge, I-M-P-I-N-G-J. This is PI is the symbol. They're out of Seattle, Washington. They provide radio frequency identification solutions for identifying, locating, authenticating items. So it looks like RFID, if I'm reading this correctly. Yeah, it looks like, RFID readers, chips, encoders, etc. And interesting name. It's about a $3.4 billion market cap. Earnings are going up pretty nicely. They were losing money in 2020, like a lot of companies did during COVID. 2019, they were making 4 cents a share. 2021, 25 cents a share. 87 cents in 2022. 74 cents last year, supposed to make 98 cents this year. So definitely on a growth trajectory, supposed to make $1.92 next year, big, big jump. And it's $126 stock. So a forward-looking earnings of 60 times? No. I'll tell you this. There is a bigger company. There's a bigger company in this space that is a market cap roughly 7 times this company, and they do something very similar. So I think you're barking up the wrong tree. I like the space that it's in, but you are picking a horse that is overvalued and doesn't have a lot of long-term consistency to their business. So I would look elsewhere within this space. Now we're going to a break. Please give me a call at 888-99-SHARP.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. This is Invest Talk, and you've come to the right place. Justin Klein is here now, taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I was calling in to say that I wish Steve well, and I hope to hear him back on the air soon. I also have a question regarding a REIT that I was looking at. It's UNIT. The symbol is UNIT. Actually, it's called Unity Group. Just wondering what you thought about this REIT and if it would be a good time to get in or what would be a good entry point. I'll be listening to the answer on your podcast. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for those words about Steve. In fact, I was just texting with his wife, and I'm going to go visit him, I believe, on Friday. So I will definitely pass those kind words along. Now, looking at Unity Group, UNIT, and I think this is a clear chasing the yield. And I'll start off, and I'll probably end this call with a simple saying, chase profits, not yield. Okay, chase profits, not yield. And while this company does have profits, its yield is 10.1%. And that is a red flag. That is something, if you ever see something yielding 10%, you should say, that's a red flag. What's wrong here? What's the problem? Not, oh, that looks great. Okay. If the market is pricing it for a 10% yield, there is a problem going on here. And it's pretty simple. With this company or this REIT, that's what it is. It's a REIT. And it has long-term debt of $5.5 billion on a market cap of $1.4 billion. Its times interest earn is 0.64, so it doesn't earn its interest. So that's either issue shares or issue debt. Okay? And it's been doing both. So its return equity, return on assets is negative. And what they do is, it's a weird REIT. It rents fiber, which is a commodity business. So please, for everyone's sake, all of us out there, the first thing you look at should not be the yield, ever, ever. If the first thing you look at on a company is the yield, you are doing it wrong, extremely wrong, okay? First thing you should be looking at is profits, and not just total profits, profitability, return on equity, return on assets, return on invested capital, things like that that give you a measurement of whether or not this business is mildly profitable, highly profitable, extremely profitable, or not profitable at all. Then you can look at the yield. How is that yield being paid? What's the payout ratio, etc.? You can get into that later. But once again, chase profits, not yield. Okay? So no, run far, far, far away from UNIT Unity Group. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's talk a bit about the recent Fed announcement. And it was an interesting one for many reasons. And this is something Mohamed El-Erian just posted about in the Financial Times. And he talked about how this is the first time the central bank has raised their outlook for economic growth and inflation and continue to pivot or reiterate a dovish stance, remaining open to lowering interest rates, remaining open to reducing or to stopping the reduction of its balance sheet, right? Stopping QT. All of that is dovish in the face of growing economy, growing inflation, and unemployment rate sub 4. And it's not just the central, the Fed, it's Bank of Japan as well. They basically got off the zero bound, the negative bound, shall we say, into positive territory, very mildly positive. But basically, it was a dovish hike. And it was so dovish that the yen fell to a 32-year low on the announcement that they were raising rates. And then the day after the Fed meeting, the Swiss National Bank, unexpectedly, they cut their interest rate. And the currency fell 1%. So what you're seeing is that the central banks globally are edging towards moving their inflation target from 2% to something more like 2-3% in a range. And that just reiterates what we've been saying for a long time. This is an inflationary environment. This is a different market. Interest rates are headed higher over time. And the leaders of the market are likely to shift as well, because that brings a different type of earnings picture for cyclical businesses. And those are starting to outperform once again. Well, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.